Support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC comes from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. I'm your Alaska Live host, Lori Neufeld. My guest today, Nor'easter. Welcome, you guys.
Hey. Thanks.
Show us what you got. Take off with a tune. some driving dance music. That's really Nor'easter. You have what it takes to drive a dance floor, I think.
It's fun to do.
Max Newman, you play guitar and mandolin for the band. And Julie Vallemont back there on the keyboards. And I think you brought along your accordion also. And Cedar Stanistreet on fiddle. And you make up the trio of Nor'easter. Max Newman, you're no stranger to Fairbanks.
No, this is nice to be back.
You, I would say, are the driving force of getting this band here to Alaska, because you grew up here in Fairbanks, right?
Yeah. So I grew up and was playing dances here, contra dances, as a kid. I remember I think I was probably around 10 or 11, and I've been attending a lot of band rehearsals for my dad's band, Celtic Confusion.
Yep. Gary Newman, your dad.
Gary Newman's my dad, yeah, and... So I'd been through a lot of rehearsals and sitting on the sidelines at contra dances, reading a book, sort of uninterested, and then suddenly something snapped,
right,
and started playing and also dancing, which is what it's all about. So
that's
a very formative experience for me, and carried me through, and kept doing it after I left for school and was going to school out in the Boston area, where there's a lot of dancing there as well,
and that's where you formed this band. Nor'easter is out in the Boston area. Did you meet Cedar and Julie in school?
No, so Julie probably remembers this story better than I do. I have the version of the story that Julie has told me is true. So
do we want to get Julie to tell it? We got to get the keyboardist to tell us the story of how Nor'easter met and formed.
Well, a long time ago, that was about 2008, and there was a dance at MIT, a contra dance there that was very sit-in friendly, so musicians could come in and just sit in with the band. And I was just learning to play for dances at the time, and so I was sitting in one night, and there was this new fiddler who came, who had just moved to Boston for school, and that was Cedar, and so I was playing in the band. And I asked him to join me, or a couple weeks later, he asked me to join him. But at one point, the dance asked Cedar to play the dance, and they asked me to join him. And he also asked Max, who I kind of knew, like I'd seen him around and like been with him in the scene, but I don't think we had even ever played tunes before. I'd heard you play, but I'd never had the great pleasure until Cedar booked us both, and we played a dance, and we're like, hey, that was kind of fun. So it's opportunities like this where musicians can mingle, and that's kind of the magic of sometimes playing for contra dance, is getting to meet other musicians and the way it works, and that is a neat opportunity for us.
And it all happened at MIT. Are the dancers at MIT rather precise engineers?
they're a good crew, and what the really great thing about those guys is the MIT dancers are very willing to tolerate all kinds of adventures musically. And so it's a really great dance for people who've never played together before to do, which you can do at a contra dance anyway. It's such a genre of music that's so based in improvising in the moment and figuring out what you're going to do on the fly, because you have the context of a dance to play for. And
what did you do to just make your fiddle player just leave the room?
I just psyched out his little sound post or something.
A string broke.
Oh, a string broke.
Oh,
I think it's the change in humidity.
Oh, live radio. Live the fiddle radio. Player's string broke after the intro music. Oh, well, yeah. No, it is very dry up here. Well, no, it says 79% humidity, but I don't think that's true. I think it's frozen humidity.
Frozen humidity. That'd be a good band name there.
Right?
I think that's called ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Well, while we're waiting for Cedar to come back, Nor'easter, that's a really cool name. It's like the name of a storm in the Northeast, right?
Yeah, it's definitely evoking that kind of Northeast thing, which is the home of this music in some way. Yeah. And so we're playing into that a little bit.
Cool.
Even though none of us is from New England originally, but don't tell anybody that.
We all live there now.
We all live there now.
Right, Max, you're from Fairbanks, Alaska, and Julie is all the way from...
I'm from upstate New York, near Rochester.
Oh, okay.
And Cedar is from the other upstate, or as he might say, the real upstate, near Potsdam. He's from upstate. And Cedar and Max both were really exposed to contra dancing. Cedar also grew up in the traditional fiddle scene and going to dances and playing. And John Kirk and Trish Miller were musicians out there who brought him along, and he played with them a lot. And I kind of came across later in life. It wasn't until I moved to New England that I learned about it. So I lived in Rochester, but there was a dance there. I never knew about it the whole time I was there. It took me a while later to figure out what it was. Thanks.
Because, Julie, your background is not in the traditional dance music. It's more classically trained, right?
Yeah, all three of us have other things in our backgrounds. I was a church organist for about 15 years. And I think the main skill that I carried over to contra dancing was knowing how to play for people. It's a very functional thing. Like, the music exists for a purpose.
Yeah.
And it's for people to have some kind of experience. And also being able to multitask, which is also really important when you're playing for contra dances, because there's a lot to keep an eye on.
Did the organ and accordion, did that help you? Your background playing the pipe organ help you, like, multitask on the accordion? Because I know that you brought your accordion in today too, Julie.
I did. You know, I thought, I'd hoped that they might translate more. It's a completely different spatial experience playing the instrument sideways, and just the keys are just a slightly different size and different spacing, and I had to, like, relearn all the motor patterns.
Interesting.
So I thought, you know, you don't want to play it like a sideways piano. There's also a whole area of bellows technique to explore. And so I feel like I'm still very much getting to learn the instrument and getting to see what it's capable of, because it's not just a sideways organ, as cool as that would be.
Maybe you can invent that someday. The sideways organ.
But I was drawn to the accordion. The sideways organ. I was drawn to the accordion partly because it has a lot in common with the organ. The piano is a very percussive instrument, but the organ breathes, and the accordion breathes in a very similar way. So I felt a kinship with it.
How many years ago did you pick up the accordion?
Four?
Yeah.
There have been times when I've been studying it more seriously than others. But I first got my first accordion 4 years ago from Germany on eBay. Which is not always the best way to get one, but it worked for me.
Well, I mean, the polka in, you know, oompa bands in Germany, that's the best place to get an accordion from.
There's a lot of accordions in Germany.
They probably make them there.
Yeah, mine is a Hohner from Germany. Uh-huh. Although these are now made in China, sadly. Oh. But my first one was an actual German one made in Germany. Excellent. And there's a lot of accordions in Europe. Yeah, Cedar also has a classical background, too.
Right. I think a lot of people that come into folk music end up, you know, coming from that classical background because that's where they first got their start, maybe in the Suzuki method or, mm-hmm. you know, taking piano lessons as a kid. Or, as you said, Julie, you were your church organist for so many years. How old were you when you started being the church organist? That you must have been very young.
Maybe 14, something like
14.
That.
14.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've our fiddle player has returned.
Yay.
And
oh.
Yay!
Fourth string.
Yeah, do a little tuning. It's okay. It's live radio. You know, we can go to even, if you want to do live tuning, that's fine. I can talk about with Max some about your dance weekend, if you want to.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the dance weekend.
All right. Tune away.
Yeah. So the whole thing about what we're up for is we're coming up to play. We're going to play dances tonight and tomorrow, and then we get to do a concert in addition to that whole thing.
Tonight you're playing at the Pioneer Park Dance Theater,
that's so right.
And that's where you can come and dance with Nor'easter. You'll have a caller there, and what time does that get started?
That's going to start, I think it starts at 8 o'clock. Indeed it does.
Great.
8 o'clock and goes till 11 o'clock. So accessible to just show up. You don't need to know anything.
Beginners are completely welcome.
Absolutely.
They're willing to learn, just be willing to learn a new dance.
Yeah, I mean, that's
cool.
The goal is you're doing it right if you're having fun. So that's what we like to be a part of enabling.
Smiles abound.
Exactly.
And then tomorrow you're up here at the university for some workshops and dances.
And the workshops are really just dances that have a specific focus. So we're going to, among them, let's see, we've got a dances that flow workshop where it's fun for us to kind of work with the caller, and the caller's going to work with the band on, you know, dances that have kind of that extra bit of flow. And then we're going to do sort of a hybrid thing with doing English country dance / contra dance, and they're cousins. So it's going to be cool. We're going to pull that a little bit. And then we're just going to go ahead and do some challenging dances after that. But then we go for the regular dance in the evening, do one more.
Up at the Wood Center Ballroom.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. And what time does that get started tomorrow night?
That's going to be 7:30.
All right.
7:30 to 10:30.
And you have a college coffee house gig also on Sunday night.
Yes.
So after the Super Bowl watching, you can go and chill out.
Yeah, and if anybody has an iPhone, they could bring it and give us updates.
Well, what time is your college coffee house gig?
Oh, you know, I'm in Boston time still.
Yeah, so you'll be fine. Oh, yeah, it'll be done and over with. We'll know the winner by then.
Oh, man, or the loser.
Right? Wow, you've got a team playing in this, don't you?
You know, all I know is my girlfriend watches football, and she taught me a few things about sort of being able to get by with a lack of knowledge. So I just talk about the running game, and that's gotten me pretty far.
Good job. Are we all tuned up and ready to?
Yeah, let's play something else for
you. What's on the set list then?
I think let's play a set of jigs for you. That'd be real nice.
Okay.
These are two jigs, first of which is written by Liz Carroll, the great Irish Chicago fiddler. It's called The Champagne Jig Goes to Columbia, which there's a whole story behind that, not worth relaying yet. And the second tune is very modestly titled A Jig by one of the great fiddlers out in our neck of the woods, Western Massachusetts, David Kaner. Which he co-wrote that tune. So we'll play those two for you.
Well, great. This is Nor'easter on KUAC's Alaska Live.
Oh, yeah, keyboard.
Thanks.
We like to hear the keyboard.
We do like to hear the keyboard and the fiddle. And Max is on the mandolin now.
Thank you.
Oh, nice a lilting one there from Nor'easter. You know, this is fun sitting here with you guys listening to a dance band, because sometimes when you're at a dance, it's hard to pay attention to, you know, some of the more detailed parts of the music, and because you're concentrating so much on getting the steps right and, you know, do-si-doing with your partner. But this is nice to be able to just sit and listen to a dance band, too.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing to move back and forth between playing for dancing and playing for listening.
Do you play for some concerts too? I mean,
absolutely,
like a college coffee house, you're going to play
right.
for a concert,
and it draws out a different thing from you, and you want to showcase different aspects of maybe even the same music, because there's that sort of the thing that you get playing for a dance. People are listening in a subconscious way. And they're listening with their feet and kind of with their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's very visceral. And you can't totally get by with that in the same way when you're playing and people are listening
in a
careful way when they're sitting. I mean, what you want to try to do is you want to evoke that experience in some way if you're trying to showcase some dance music. But it can't be exactly the same, because when people aren't moving, there's a whole other set of things that comes into play.
That's what I was thinking as I was listening to that last song. It was so beautiful and soaring. And I don't know if you ever play that song for a dance.
Oh, absolutely.
You do?
All the time.
Wow. And so it must be just louder and sped up a little bit,
I think if anything, we try to give it, it always depends on the context of mm-hmm. how the dancers are doing in that moment. But we might need to give it a little bit more rhythm, just to make sure that people know what's going on. But you can get away with a lot for a dance too, so that's also true.
I love how songs can take on a different life, different context for, you know, the venue you're in or the people or the situation you're playing for. Different songs take on just a different life.
So what's really lovely about doing this dance music is that it's based in the live experience. It wouldn't be the same if you pushed play and were trying to dance to a recording.
Mm-hmm. You do have a recording, though.
True, yes. It would be even better if you listened to our recording and danced to it.
You just put out a CD called Waiting for the Snow, and it is really good.
Thank you.
Put in context of for a debut album, this is a really good CD, period. You guys did such a professional job, and every song has like its own life and rhythm. And did you write some of the songs on here, or are they all arranged from traditional tunes?
Yeah, some of the tunes on there are ours. I think it's maybe a third of them are ones that we've done, but we felt it was important to have both sides of that. So we've got some traditional things, some other things that you might call modern traditional, and try to bring out the variety there. Cool. Something that all sounds relatively consistent. But it was fun to get a chance to showcase some of our tunes on that, for sure.
Should we listen to one of those and then bring in your caller that you brought along and talk to Rebecca for a little bit after that?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
So tell us about the tune we're going to hear from your recording, Waiting for the Snow.
Yeah, well, I think we'll listen to the Pippin and Cheesequake set, as we call it. And that's a tune that I wrote with a tune that Julie wrote. And they're maybe pushing the boundaries of what is traditional a little bit more than some of the other things on the album, but it's
all the
fun.
Bands are doing it
exactly.
These days.
So we gave in. This was the one where we were like, all right, let's put an organ on there for the organist in the band. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
Right. Thank you. featured a track off of Nor'easter's Waiting for the Snow, and that was Pippin and Cheesequake, not to be confused with Cheesecake, which is also very good, but that was a fun song. Wow. Rebecca Lay, welcome to the KUAC studios at Alaska Live. You are the caller for Nor'easter, which entails what?
Well, it means I basically stand up and tell people what to do all evening. It's great, actually. I'm the caller, which means I give the dance instructions before the dance actually happens with music. We walk it through without music so that you get a chance to learn it before we bring the band in and, you know, go for it. We
Very
get a chance
fun.
To practice ahead of time.
Very
Work
fun.
Out any of the kinks that may happen.
And so then the band comes in and plays it maybe a little slower through the first part of the dance while you get all the dancers going in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is something that if somebody's never danced before, can they just walk into a dance and expect by the end of the night to have a good time?
And... Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to bring a partner?
No, you
okay.
don't. You
Great.
Can come. You can come by yourself. Contra dances are places where you can definitely meet lots of really great people because you dance with a different person for every dance. We switch partners, and that's just part of the culture. So it's a great place to meet people.
So fun. And the contra dance scene seems to be picking up steam all over the nation. I don't know about the world, but really there's more contra dances going on here in Fairbanks, it seems like, and in Alaska. And what's it like in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm actually from Vermont. The band is from Boston. But yeah, it's definitely picking up. I would say that in New England, I mean, it never really went away, but there have been sort of waves of, you know, times when it was a pretty small event, you know, in pockets here and there in New England. But now it seems to be definitely a revival. There's contra dances all over the place, especially in New England, because that's where it's from.
Right. Do you get the hipsters showing up at your contra dances, too?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Everybody's welcome.
Yeah. Of course, everybody's welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
How cute is it to have the retirees and the hipsters dancing
it's
together?
It's wonderful. And we also have the, you know, 10-year-old kids who have been dancing since they were, you know, falling asleep under the piano at the break, you know. So, you know, like Max. Used
mm-hmm.
to.
Right, exactly.
So we have those kids who, you know, learn how to dance when they're still in the womb. And it's great. It's wonderful to see everybody dancing together.
So at break, you've got the retirees trying to get how to make their phones, their smartphones work with the hipsters, you know,
exactly.
helping them. Yeah,
exactly.
Perfect.
Everyone helps out, you know. It's great.
It's just a nice mix of people and good feel. Everybody can get into it. Like you said, no matter your age or your experience level.
Right. It's a real community.
Yeah. And you're going to be teaching people how to call. Is that correct?
I will. There's a special callers workshop.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And so is that something you do back east also?
Yeah. I've done it in many different places, you know, for special events like this weekend. I often try to run callers workshop because there should be more callers in the world. There should be more people who know how to get a room full of people up and dancing because it's a great way. It's a great way, like I said, for people to meet each other. You know, if you have some sort of event, like I do a lot of weddings and parties and, you know, it's a great way for people who don't really know each other. And it might be sort of an awkward situation to just get up and dance. And then it's an icebreaker for any sort of situation like that. It's really wonderful.
And it turns out it's pretty darn good exercise without even trying
it
to
is,
exercise.
Actually. And there's good music to go along with it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You seem no stranger to a mic, Rebecca.
I'm not. It turns out.
Pretty good. It seems like you got the distance down. And what's your background?
Well, I used to actually work for public radio stations. So,
really?
In fact, this feels very much like home for me.
Nice.
Yeah. It's wonderful to be here.
And what do you do these days if you don't work for public radio and you're calling dances?
Well, yeah, I spend a lot of time actually on the road, either driving around calling dances or flying different places like Fairbanks. This is wonderful.
In the winter?
For dances, yeah, yeah. When Max asked me to do this, I said, well, of course I'm going to Fairbanks, Alaska with you in January. Yeah.
Nice.
It's awesome. But yeah, I also I make pickles for a living.
Excuse me?
Yes, I make pickles.
And you, like, sell them at farmers markets?
Yeah,
and,
I actually, we don't generally sell at farmers markets. I work for a company back home called Real Pickles, and we are a traditionally fermented pickle company.
Oh, wow. So you don't brine them, you ferment them.
Yeah, we ferment them. I mean, it is brined,
but
there's no vinegar involved and there's no cooking. So it's the traditional way of making pickles. Like before refrigeration and people needed to keep vegetables around through the winter, this is how they kept them around. You know, they would just put, you know, grind up the cabbage, you know, and put it in the crock with some salt and some water and put a plate on top of it with a rock on top,
right.
And that's how you had cabbage throughout the whole winter.
Because we grow some giant cabbages.
I have heard.
Here in
I want to see some Alaska cabbage.
You want to make some sauerkraut?
I do. It's true. At work, we keep a record of like the biggest, heaviest cabbage we've ever seen. We've had a 14.5-pound cabbage, and that is a big cabbage. But I've heard that you have some bigger ones here.
No, on. Our Alaska cabbage made it on All Things Considered, NPR, baby. This year we had world record.
Yeah, I've seen pictures, but I'd love to see one in person.
You got to come back in the late summer, early fall here,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is great. It's so wonderful to hear that the tradition of contra dance and English dance is running so strong. You guys are a young group, and you're really carrying it through. And even putting a modern touch on it, as we heard with the recording that you have, and that was driving and danceable just as much as the traditional music.
Definitely. So,
well, thanks for coming in and talking to us, Rebecca. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. And the workshops will continue all weekend. And it's really awesome to have you here in Fairbanks and
thanks
on
a lot.
Alaska Live.
It's great to be here.
Cool. And we'll bring back the band for another tune. How's that sound?
All right.
All right.
Is it accordion time?
I think it's accordion time.
It's accordion time?
It's accordion time.
All right.
Yeah, we'll do another set of tunes here. One tune that Cedar wrote, and another tune by a great contra dance band from Montreal area. And so, yeah, two tunes for you.
And one of them is written by your fiddle player, Cedar.
Indeed.
Great.
Yep.
This is dance band Nor'easter live on Alaska Live. Thank you. beautiful tune from Nor'easter. Can we move the mic to maybe talk to Cedar? I don't think we've gotten much in the way of hearing from the fiddle player. And you wrote that tune.
The first tune, that's it, yeah.
Very nice.
The tune called The Rainy Day in Orono, which I wrote a couple years ago in the fall.
Where's Orono?
Orono, Maine. It's about half an hour north of Bangor.
Wow.
So I wrote that tune, and I hadn't really played it in public, but I was there for a dance in Bangor and was sharing it with some people, and it was a beautiful fall rainy day, so I decided to name it The Rainy Day in Orono.
Is it harder to name instrumental tunes, or is it harder to name the tunes that have words?
You know, I've never written a tune that has words, so I don't really know. Sometimes instrumental tunes I find I write just have a name right away, and sometimes I can write a tune, it can be a couple of years before I find out a name that goes with it. Mm-hmm.
And that piece between your song that you wrote and the tune that's the traditional part, the second half of that, what's that part called? The transition or the glue or the...
Transition mm-hmm. or an interlude or, yeah, it's one of those.
It was really pretty on that one. I felt like, here we go to the next one. It was setting it up nicely.
Yep.
And you have to write that somehow. That's written in, obviously.
For that arrangement, those two tunes, I actually wrote the first tune to go with the second tune specifically. And that transition came about because we were just sort of jamming, trying to make an arrangement for our recording, and found out this neat chord progression, which transfers nicely from E minor to E major.
Yeah, and that's a common thing that happens, too, is there's a key change.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And all of a sudden is it usually minor to major?
It can go either way.
Okay.
Often dance sets are three tunes, and it could go major, minor, major, or going from minor to major gives a nice sort of brightening up effect,
yes.
Which for dancing can really be a crowd pleaser.
Exactly. It's kind of like the clouds were in front of the sunshine, but you knew the sun was going to come out, and then the sun comes out with a major key.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you grow up playing dance music? They were talking about you while you were out of the room changing a string earlier, and it sounded like maybe you didn't grow up playing dance music.
Oh, actually, I did.
Okay.
I grew up playing both. I started classical violin lessons when I was five, and so...
little violin?
I had an eighth size. Pretty cute.
Uh-huh.
But my family was into the folk music community. We went to festivals, like the big festivals back east. And so I grew up around the music and picked up fiddling when I was about nine also, in addition to the classical music. So I don't remember when the first time I actually played for a dance was. I think it was when I was around maybe 12 or 13.
Oh, people must have loved that. Do you know very many people who go from playing folk music to classical? Because it seems like kind of common where classically trained musicians end up in the folk scene. But it doesn't seem like the folk musicians end up in the classical scene very often.
I don't think there really is as many, because classical music, a lot of the classical pieces are, especially for violin, physically, technically more difficult. And if you didn't start playing classical music when you were young, you don't have the technical proficiency to play those tunes, but pretty much any classical musician, if they're around the style enough, can figure out how to play fiddle tunes.
The conductor is not going to like your technique if you learn to play fiddle, maybe.
Well, yeah, that's probably true.
And writing music, is that something you've been doing since you got your start?
Not actually. I haven't written that many tunes at all in my life, maybe a half dozen, but... Occasionally I write some tunes, and I don't think I wrote any tunes when I was a kid, but in the past few years I go through spurts of writing a few tunes. Like, there's a bunch of tunes on our album that I wrote in a relatively short span of time, not for the album, just because I was into writing tunes then.
Yeah. You're also into building instruments.
Yes. I went to Boston to go to school for violin making. That's
Oh, really?
What brought me there, and I guess caused me to meet these guys and form Nor'easter. But I went to North Bennett Street School and learned violin making in a 3-year program there.
Did you make the one that you're playing today?
I didn't make this one. This
okay.
is an antique instrument I've had since before college. And
ooh, antique. When was it made?
Well, antique as in not modern. It's 1927, which is not particularly antique as violins go, but it's definitely old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you make instruments to sell.
Yeah, I have made a few. I mean, I just finished school like a year ago, so okay. I haven't made that many yet. But I have sold one, and I've played one of the ones I made at school. I've been playing off and on for gigs, and actually the Waiting for the Snow album that we recorded last year is entirely recorded using that instrument that I made.
And you're mostly into making violins, or are you making guitars and mandolins and such?
No, just violins. Okay. At school, we learned violins, violas, cellos. So, good. Yep.
How fun to be able to get inside the workings of the instrument you love so much.
I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
Like doing the detail work. And
so you're probably, you were able to change your string rather quickly. That probably goes to the trade.
Being a violinist, that helps to know how to. Yeah. Luckily, I had one on hand. I had to go searching through my messy case to find a spare, but.
All good. Well, ready to launch into another dance tune, Nor'easter?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. What is it? Do we know?
All right. What is it?
Cedar, what is
it? These next tunes, a set of two Irish tunes. First one is called The Exile of Erin, and I don't remember who that was written by. It's a modern tune by an Irish musician. The second tune is called Bear Island.
And that was written by Trad? Trad writes a lot of them.
It's my area of geeky knowledge here.
Max, you've got the history of songs down.
Well, I was the person who was responsible to find out if we needed to pay anybody for any of the tunes. So this fits into my category of knowledge. They're both modern, sort of modern Irish tunes in the sense they were written in the same as the violin. I mean, they're modern in the sense they were composed by people who were recently deceased, as opposed to deceased long ago. Only the second one is the recently deceased. Poor Sully.
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, the first tune, he's not dead yet. He's still got some time, some life in him. But
cool.
They're great tunes. So.
And Max is back on mandolin for this one. And it looks like Julie has set down the accordion and back to the keyboards and Cedar, newly strung up, fiddle. Thank you. I can definitely see where that one would be really fun to dance to. Julie, is keyboards or piano? I know accordion is probably a very traditional dance instrument, but keyboards or piano? I mean, I don't know. I'm not from the Northeast. I don't know what you guys' traditions are, but I've never seen it, you know, at our Appalachian mm-hmm. clogging square dances.
The piano has a long history in contra dance.
Really?
And many piano players especially would say it's the original contra dance rhythm instrument, the quintessential one, at least. There are a lot of different fiddle traditions that make their way into contra dance music, and that's one of the things that's so neat to me about it, where you can play tunes from Ireland, you can play tunes from Scotland, from Cape Breton, you can play tunes from Appalachia, and each of those has its own cultural norms. And so you wouldn't see the piano so much in traditional Appalachian music, for example. Right. It's very much at home in Cape Breton music. It's very much at home in the music of Quebec. It's very much at home in the music of Scotland. Not as much in Irish music, but there is a history of piano players in Ireland, and there's still some great ones today. So it's kind of fun for me as an accompanist to take tunes from different styles and adapt them, A, for playing for contra dancing, which is a different sound. My technique for contra dancing is different than I would play if I were just accompanying a tune, because I feel like my main job is to provide rhythm.
And the piano is a rhythm instrument. I mean, it's hammers hitting.
I mean, the original contra dance accompaniment is boom check, and it tells your feet when to go down, and it tells your feet when to come up, and it works great, and I still do it today. And there are, of course, guitarists and all sorts of other instruments for contra dancing, and you can bring in all sorts of influences. But that's one of the neat things for me, is that there's just so many different perspectives and different cultural elements that you can choose to try to pay homage to, or you can take a tune and put it in an entirely different setting. You know, like those two tunes that we just played, we didn't play in the most traditional of styles all the time, and that's what's neat about it.
Has Max brought to the table any of the Athabascan fiddle tunes? Because I can imagine you could put piano in there. It would definitely not be traditional, because getting a piano out to a village is kind of hard. Getting a fiddle out there, much easier. But
I haven't shared any of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I first met Max as an Irish musician. Uh-huh. Mostly that was what you were to me.
Well, one of these days, maybe he'll pick up one from Alaska and share an Athabascan fiddle tune.
I mean, it's all that when you were talking before about the tunes that we just played and the composers, one of the things that I first fell in love with about this kind of music is the way that you really get to know the story behind a tune, who wrote it and what they named it and where it came from. And usually, like, you learned it from someone who learned it from someone who learned it from someone, and it's been renamed three times in the process and maybe changed a little bit. And it really feels very much like a living tradition. You know, you're pulling on this thread that's attached to so many other people. And so just like the dancing brings people together, I find that the music really brings people together. And you can sit and have this common language where you can just sit and play tunes of people you've never met before. And it's really magical.
Have you guys traveled internationally as a band?
Canada.
Canada counts.
Although this is the farthest we've actually gone in terms of miles.
Well, got to kind of go through or over
Canada
or whatever to get here. So, yeah. So you find that the traditions in Canada and in the Northeast are all from a very same tradition of dance music.
Yeah, and it's like visiting places and getting to meet people. Like if you're in Quebec, getting to play with some of the musicians from Quebec, they have their own musical style there and even their own style of dancing. And you go to Appalachia and there's, you know, clogging and other kinds. And it's like this giant cultural exchange program, you know, and then we have our niche as a contra dance band.
Do you guys ever have a Boron playing with you?
Yeah. We have, yes.
Uh-huh. In Canada.
In Canada. Yeah, a few. We met someone in Guelph, Canada, Jacob McCauley, who joined us. That was really fun.
Because I can see that would, the Boron, the Irish drum, would hand drum, would really drive a dance floor, too.
We all have all sorts of percussion. We also play with drum set drummers.
Really?
A few. And we play with Russell Shumsky sometimes, who also has a background in African drumming. So lots of different kinds of things, from whistles and cowbells to Borons and contra. It's all home.
So fun. It has been such a pleasure to have you here. Nor'easter, do you have a finale for us? Okay.
I do.
All right. You want to introduce this?
This last set, you were talking about keys before. This is a progression that's a little less usual. Should I? I don't want to give it away, but
you can talk about it afterwards
okay.
if you want to.
No.
Or you know,
it will be obvious.
It will be obvious. Okay, Nor'easter here on Alaska Live.
Here.
No problem. I'll just introduce you one more time. It is Cedar Santa Street on fiddle and Julie Valmont playing keyboards, and we have Max Newman playing the mandolin and guitar. Thank you. so fun. That was great. If you'd like to see more Nor'easter tonight at Pioneer Park, you can dance along with them at the dance. And tomorrow there's workshops going on, and there's a dance at the Wood Center at the ballroom. And then on Sunday, you can take in the College Coffee House concert. What time is that at the College Coffee House? You know. I think at contraborealis.org is a, and your website at nor'easterband.com. Thanks to my guests, Nor'easter. It's been wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I'd also like to thank Gary Newman for setting this up, Charlie Hunt for delivering the keyboard, and KUAC's intern, Robin Wood. For KUAC's Alaska Live, I'm Lori Neufeld. KUAC's Alaska Live series of live music and conversation with local and visiting artists is provided by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. Next Alaska Live right here on KUAC is next week, same time, same place, and it's with Alistair Frazier and Natalie Haas, fiddleist, and she plays cello. Natalie plays cello and Alistair plays fiddle, and they do a great blend of Celtic and acoustic, and they're my next guest next Friday, February 8th at 1 o'clock on Alaska Live. Thanks to Nor'easter for being my guest today.